Hello and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In his first statement since Saturday's acquittal of George Zimmerman, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said Monday that the killings of Trayvon Martin was a tragic, unnecessary shooting and that the 17-year-old's death has provided an opportunity for the nation to speak honestly about complicated and emotionally charged issues. Holder's Justice Department is investigating the potential for filing federal civil rights charges against Zimmerman, much like those successfully made against two Los Angeles police officers acquitted in the brutal beating of Rodney King in 1991. Since the shooting last year, the case has inflamed people, both sides, those who believe Zimmerman profiled Martin and those who say he acted in self-defense. Well, let's see here. Today, we want your take on the verdict. Should Zimmerman face additional charges? What does his acquittal say about the criminal justice system, the idea of justifiable murder? Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. And you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's the one I would recommend. Emailing us at voxpop@wamc.org. Here's the deal. What I want to do here is to have this as an ongoing conversation. I'd love it if everybody could just try to make it civil. That's very important. Okay, let's go to Kermit in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Okay, Kermit, you're on.
Good afternoon, Dr. Chartok.
Hey.
My comments today are not directed primarily at the outcome of the trial in Florida. I think the Florida statutes and its laws are yet to be fully understood by the rest of us. But I direct to you as an expert in communications and in journalism what I think is a more probing question, and that is the role the press played in covering the case against George Zimmerman and the so-called Martin trial. Specifically, I don't know that you're a fan of MSNBC, which I am not really, but someone in my family is. So I am curious to have your reaction to the following. I see that Reverend Al Sharpton, who was first on the bandwagon in this case in Florida, beating the drum for criminal charges, was and is a commentator for MSNBC, mm-hmm. was beating the drum on MSNBC regarding the criminal action. And then, while the jury was out and subsequent to that, was also out on the street in parades and rallies. And my question to you is, what does the industry say about a so-called journalist making the news?
I have no idea.
Well, what is your response?
What do you mean, my response?
What is your reaction to the way in which MSNBC and Reverend Sharpton conducted himself in covering what was news?
Well, look.
He was out there making it.
Well, look, Kermit, this is what these people do. I'm not endorsing it, certainly not endorsing it, and I'm certainly not rejecting it because I don't know enough about it. I didn't see Sharpton. I have no idea what he said. I have no idea what happened. But I can tell you I'm not in favor of it in that Fox does it all the time, one way or another. They're forever beating the drum on one cause or another. Sometimes it's thinly disguised. Sometimes it's not. That's all I can say. I can't comment on what I don't know.
Okay, well, the comment wasn't specifically directed only about MSNBC, but I agree with you about Fox News, and I guess the question is the role of journalism in these kinds of matters, and whether to what extent a journalist should be involved and participate.
Well, I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, the truth of the matter is, if there's something that I truly believe in, I will never join a picket line. I won't. Because I think it is conflictive and the rest. However, I can tell you a little bit about the way journalism works. MSNBC, CNN, the rest of them, they're all competing for advertising dollars. Along comes the Boston, mess, and people say it was overcovered, but everybody was stuck to their television. CNN rises to the top from third or fourth place, and news directors say, hey, if it's going to help us and if it's going to get us viewers, we're going to do it. We don't have a country where we have a journalism council, if you're following me, Kermit, which says you can't do this because it doesn't work. It's been tried. It won't happen. So the most we can do is say, OK, I wouldn't do it. And that's the case. And we got five people on the phones, Kermit, so I'm going to let you go.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you. Bye. OK. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Actually, there are two free phones. I wouldn't want to lie to you. So now let's go to Terrence in Albany, New York. OK, Terrence, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to comment. First of all, before anything happened, George Zimmerman had called 911 from
right.
his car, right, reporting a suspicious activity.
Right.
The 911 operator said, "Do not pursue. The police will be on their way."
Right.
Now, the fact that he disobeyed that, which, I mean, one, a 911 operator is not the same thing as a police officer telling you something. I know it's not law, but shouldn't you take that advice? Shouldn't you just do what they say and trust that the police will take care of it?
Well, in my opinion, yes.
But that's not what he did.
That's
right. He followed him, got in an altercation, and killed him.
Yes, that's right.
I don't understand why this trial went on for so long, because that right there...
Does it prove a murder? Does it prove manslaughter? I mean, his argument... By the way, in the introduction, I talked about what happened to Rodney King. That was on tape. That was on tape. There was no two ways about it. But in this case, it wasn't on tape. All we had was hearsay. One guy was dead, one guy was alive.
But I think at the end of the day, if he had just done what he was told, Trayvon Martin wouldn't have been killed.
Well, nobody ever said he wasn't stupid. Nobody
right.
ever
nobody
ever said that he used his brain. The question was, were you sitting on that jury? And
well,
the question.
No.
I want to finish. Were you sitting on the jury and you had to make up your mind whether he was guilty of manslaughter or whether he was guilty of murder? And you read the statute and the statute was read to you. Would you have convicted?
Of at least manslaughter.
You would have.
I think I would have. And the other thing, I know if I were a jury member, I wouldn't have known this at the time, but there's a woman right now who was just sentenced to jail over the same thing,
yeah.
and she didn't kill anybody. She fired a warning shot at somebody who was coming into her house to do harm to her.
And she was black, by the way.
And she was a black woman. And
mm.
so, and she, and but the stand your ground defense didn't work for her. And why?
Mm-hmm. Was it in Florida?
Was that I believe case? It was, yes.
Okay. Well, Terrence, you raised some interesting questions. We're going to let everybody have a chance to help answer them. We thank you
all
for
right,
calling.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Bye-bye.
All right.
1-800-348-2551. Three free phones. Your chances of getting in are very good right now. Let's go to Ray in Cheshire. Okay, Ray, you're on.
Alan, my point was exactly the same. This gentleman was told to remain in his vehicle and not to pursue. I do not understand why, first of all, he chose to pursue this guy, knowing the police were coming.
Okay.
And it just, you know what, I'm sorry, but the other caller just brought up my point. I said, he should have been convicted on that alone.
Convicted of what?
Wait, Ray,
what would you convict him on? What is it that you would convict him on? What crime? Being stupid?
He wasn't.
Being stupid? I mean, what's the crime in that case? So the guy didn't listen to what he was told. Now, is that manslaughter or is that murder? I don't think so.
Well, I'll tell you what, had he listened, the kid would be alive.
Without question. And here's what I want to know and what my wife wants to know, because I'm coming from the same place you are.
Right.
And that is, are they going to reinstate him? This guy who didn't obey the rules as articulated by the 911 person or the police, are they going to reinstate him? I know they handed him back his gun the minute the trial was over.
Yeah, well, more in Florida, probably. One other quick point.
Sure.
I thought that the six-woman jury was, you know, that was, to me, you know what? We all know how men intimidate women, and I just think that was a setup from the beginning.
Well, in other words, women. That would mean that the prosecutors were in on it. Because remember,
oh, yes.
Remember that the voir dire gives both sides a chance to dismiss jurors.
Right.
And the fact that there were six chosen would mean that you're coming up with a conspiracy theory here, that the whole thing was a fix.
I don't know. I think six women just, I don't know. I have nothing against women. I love them. But I don't know. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's see here. Let's go to Mr. Greg. All right. Greg in outside of Albany. Greg, you're on.
I just called to make a statement. Being an African-American male.
Yep.
In the society that we live in right now.
Right.
I used to work in juvenile corrections and... what I'm seeing and understanding is this, that there's an image that came across on television
yep.
that told the younger generation to be a certain way, but it also told the older generation, I'm talking about a Caucasian generation, to view us that certain way. And because we're viewed that certain way by a Caucasian population, you have things like this that happen. You got people that will, police that will pull you over because of who you are, because of what you're wearing on your skin.
Driving while black. Go ahead. Right.
Driving while black, yes. And just what happened to Drayvon is a very sad thing that happened to him, and it's sad that a jury found Mr. Zimmerman not guilty. And I just want to say that through all of this, that it's bringing up questions and it's bringing up a situation that we need to discuss. This has needed to have been discussed a long time ago, but because of what happened right now, it's being discussed, and hopefully there will be changes that will come about, and I'm glad that the federal government is looking into this.
Okay. Hey,
and that's all
Ray, I appreciate your call very much. I really mean that. And you've certainly added to the conversation. What I'm going to do now is take a short break, and I'll be back to talk to Greg and Brad and Mark and Jose. Okay, so thanks again for calling.
Support for WAMC comes from Binny Water, Ice and Spring Water, Kingston, Pure Spring Water Coffee Service, and Mountain Valley Spring Water delivered to homes and offices, local and family-owned, binnywater.com. New York State Canal Corporation, featuring the journey of the replica canal schooner Lois McClure through the Erie Canal this summer, cruise the past, unlock the adventure, canals.ny.gov. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale, artisan all-butter baked goods made from scratch, handcrafted lemon velvet cakes and egg sandwiches daily, where taste is everything, lemoncakes.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. And Dr. Johanning, Capital District in New York City, specializing in occupational and environmental health and prevention, including water problems, dampness, and mold problems, johanningmd.com.
Hey, it's your show, it's Vox Pop, I'm Alan, and you're you. And I need you to call 1-800-348-2551 to participate in the conversation. Let's go to Mark in Schenectady. Okay, Mark, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I graduated in the 70s with a degree in the arts. And I went to school for 2 years in Boston. And that time it was rough because they had a lot of riots in the combat zone in Boston, Massachusetts. But I find today we are more encamped. What I mean by that is we are less together as a society than in the 70s. Hmm. And I preface that by saying that I'm finding, even though we've made lots of advancements, black and white, that I went to school, and I had classmates who were black. We would hang out together in Kenmore Square. We'd dance. We'd have fun. And I find that we do a lot less of that.
We have a black we have a black president in the United States. Does that count for something?
It counts, but let me explain. Just because we have a black president doesn't mean when we go home that we have friends who are of the opposite race, or we go to parties and hang around.
Okay. I take your premise. Now, what's the bottom line?
I think part of this problem has to do with the way we are viewed, both black and white, yellow. And I think...
What would you do about it?
Well, to do something about it, I think that we have to go back to basics. You know, societies have to come together, and we're not doing that.
No, we got that part. What would you do about it to make it better?
That's a good question. I don't know, to be honest with you.
No, okay.
I don't know.
Okay, then your premise point is well taken, and I appreciate the call, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Okay. That leaves one free phone open. Let's go to Jose, I guess it is, in Belchertown. Is it Jose?
Hello, how you doing, sir?
How are you?
Good. First of all, I'd like to say I'm a former cop, and I'm deeply against racism, but I think that the not guilty call was the correct one. You know, the instructions by the police not to follow, and the fact that he was maybe prejudiced has no bearing. It's not a crime. I see from the jurors' perspective, they had two real things to go on, that 911 call and who was on top by a witness. And both sides...
Wait a second, was there actually a witness who saw who was on top, or was that... I mean, was there a witness, a credible witness who saw who was on top?
There was an independent, non-relative, non-related witness who said that it appeared to him that it was Trayvon on top.
I see. Okay.
So, that was the only one that was independent. Now, both sides, the relatives, were convinced that it was their son's or friend's voice.
Okay, but Jose, let me ask you this. Were you on that jury? Based on what you're telling us as a former police officer, what would you have voted? What would you have had to vote?
I would have had to vote not guilty because, as I continue saying, the juries were there confused. Both sides are so convinced. I think they came down to a common sense conclusion that witnesses are unreliable, especially if they have a motive.
But even if the witnesses were reliable, from what you say, the only piece of evidence that you're giving us was that Trayvon was on top.
Well, let me finish. That the jurors said that witnesses appeared to be unreliable. They went on what the initial detective said, that when he interviewed the father and put on the tape, the father said, that was not, paraphrasing here, that wasn't his son's voice. And there was another cop in the room that also said that and when the father was questioned, this is the key part, I think, he hesitated so much. I mean, from my cop experience, he was unsure. And that's all that is needed, is to create, doubt.
Now, which father? The father of Trayvon, yes? No.
Father of Trayvon. He was questioned, with that initial detective asking, what voice did he hear? And he indicated, paraphrasing, that it was not his son. Now later, he says it was his son's voice. So,
and then
when you hesitate like that and you don't sound convincing like all the other ones, the jury's going to see that. And I think those are the two things that they went on, that 911 call, the father hesitating, and the initial detective that was somehow mysteriously taken out of the case.
Okay, but let's assume you're right about all you've said. Let me ask you this. Do you have any doubts about Zimmerman himself?
Yes, I do. But yes, I do. I don't see the thing is who, what prosecutor is going to be able to prove what was happening there at
sure.
the end?
That's right.
When Trayvon was on top, and he was he may not have been the one screaming, but that fact that he said that Trayvon went for his gun—that's the part that nobody can ever prove, and that's the only part where there's any indication of guilt or intent on Zimmerman's part, which. You can't prove intent if you have no evidence. And it was just his mind. So the case was flawed, like the detective said in the beginning, the defense said, there was no possible way they're going to get a murder. It was a long shot to get a manslaughter, and even that was hard to prove because of the witnesses that you had.
What do you make of the earlier caller who said that he thought that the fact that there were five women on the jury may have been a basically a conspiracy by the prosecution and the defense to get him off.
Well, I think that, you know, both lawyers had a chance to get the right jurors. On the other hand, you know, from a, as a police officer, women make the best witnesses and they make best jurors in, as far as they're going to be paying attention a lot more detail than men. They're proven over and over.
Well, Jose, I really do want to thank you for your telephone call. There are a lot of people behind you, and I appreciate your contribution. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Let's go to Brad in Fonda. Okay, Brad, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Hi. I just want to say first that I've seen you on TV and listened to you on the radio for a long time, and I think that you're a great commentator and all this other good stuff. And I just had an opinion about the Zimmerman thing, and it's pretty simple. It's probably one that a lot of people have, and that's that I don't know whether he's guilty or not. I don't know because not many people probably know what really happened. But my opinion is that if George Zimmerman was black, if there was a role reversal between the victim and the aggressor, then it would have been a different outcome in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm. And that's based on what, Brad? Racism, general racism in the country?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something racism that's been going on in the South for a long time. And, old habits die hard. We know this with Paula Deen and her comments and her idea of a catering party or whatever.
Yeah.
That was what she said about the party she wanted to have, where the servants be black and all the guests be white and all that.
Yeah. So in other words, you have agreed with many of the people who've called up until now to say we really still have a huge race problem in this country.
I it's not the same everywhere you go. If you go to certain parts of the South, then you have a totally different culture that has a different history behind it than say, in the New England area.
Well, I've seen certain racist tendencies in the New England area, too. I can tell you that much.
Yeah,
but so
I agree.
Hey, listen, thanks for the call, Brad. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Al.
Yeah. Let's go to Bill in Albany. Okay, Bill, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Yeah.
I was totally disappointed in the verdict. I thought that George Zimmerman was guilty. And I think, ironically, at the end of that confrontation, I'd like to answer Jose. I don't think it matters who was on top, because at the end of that confrontation, I think that Trayvon Martin was standing his ground. Now, I was watching Good Morning America, and John Guy, one of the prosecutors, said that he thought Trayvon Martin was defending himself, and that he saw Zimmerman's gun, tried to defend himself, screamed, and was shot. And one of the commentators on MSNBC said, well, why didn't he bring that up in the courtroom? Why didn't he use that as a defense? But here's why I wanted to call. Another reason. My stepdaughter said that she saw video clips of the aftermath of that verdict in the courtroom. And she said, and I wonder if any of your callers are...
I may be able to help you with this one. Go ahead.
That she saw the gun being handed back to...
Yeah, they did it. They returned the gun.
Right in the courtroom, right at the verdict.
I believe so. I can't swear to 100%, but I saw it in the paper, and I saw somebody handing him his gun back. Yes.
I find that very, very insensitive, Alan.
Well, my other question is, and they, by the way, they, at the same time, they're taking off the ankle bracelet from him, because, of course, now he'd been acquitted. Hand back the gun. What I want to know is, if the 911 person was telling him to not go there and he went there, is he going to be reinstated in the watch group? In other words, what kind of person gets told and doesn't do it and gets reinstated?
Well, he got his gun back. What do you think?
I don't know. I have no
idea. I just find that very ironic and terribly insensitive right then and there.
I know they gave it back. I said so. I already said there's a sign up in front of me saying they gave it back. I said they gave it back.
I'll say it one more time. I think Trayvon Martin, in the end of that confrontation, was standing his ground.
Well, no, you're not alone in what we think. The question is, and, you know, I certainly know what side of this thing I'm on. I mean, I think this was terrible. But if you were one of the six women on the jury or one of the six people on the jury, all you can go on is specific evidence. Would you have voted guilty of what? Based on what evidence?
Well, I think that one of the first things Zimmerman said when he got on the phone was these, I believe he said, SN punks. To me, he had an attitude problem that night.
Well, he may have. But does that prove that when there was a confrontation, that he committed a crime?
Well, a crime was committed, in my opinion.
Yeah, in your opinion. But see, Rodney King, I'm only here to facilitate the conversation.
I know.
But Rodney King, there was a film. There was no two ways. They still let those two guys off, and they still sued under the Civil Rights, Act. But
right.
but that was a different story. They had a piece of film. The only thing here was, you know, one guy's alive, one guy's dead, one guy says how it was, and the other guy's not there to say, no, it wasn't.
Yeah, but they have an audio tape, if you will. And the
of
fact
what?
That he had
of,
that,
of somebody
well,
getting killed?
First of all, someone screaming. I believe it was Trayvon Martin screaming because, as you've heard before, right after the gunshot, the screaming stopped. And secondly, the fact that just at the beginning of that confrontation, this guy, Zimmerman, had an attitude problem. So the beginning, an attitude problem, if you will, or a prejudice, whatever you want to call it, and at the end, a gunshot.
Okay.
Now,
hey, Bill. Bill,
the dots in between.
Bill, we have now gone over it a second time, and as you know, we don't go around a third, and we thank you for your call. Very important.
Thank you,
Thanks
Alan.
A lot.
Take care.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Jeremy in Woodstock. Okay, Jeremy.
How you doing?
Hey.
It's a real complicated issue. I mean, first of all, I don't entirely blame, you can't really blame the jury. It was a nearly impossible case.
Yep.
And the law, the stand your ground law in Florida is written so badly and so broadly that, you know, it's really up to, you know, the framing of how the confrontation starts. And my understanding is, you know, if I'm a 17-year-old kid and I'm walking through a neighborhood I don't know very well at night in the rain by myself, and a large stranger starts following me, and when I run, he runs, I'm pretty sure at that point that I'm heading for a confrontation that I have no control over.
Yep.
It's not my idea, it's not what I want, but it's going to happen.
Yep.
So I would be looking for an ambush spot. I would be looking for a way to have the confrontation on my terms instead of theirs.
Uh-huh.
That would be my natural, obvious response. So for the jury to decide, or for the case to be framed as if the confrontation doesn't start until Trayvon responds to a provocation, as opposed to when the stalking began, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that there is a strong, you know, sort of bias component to this, and it's as much as everybody wishes we could figure it out and talk it out and get down to the bottom of it, it's nearly impossible because a lot of people who aren't familiar with it, haven't experienced it, have just, you know, they're just incapable of seeing it. They're incapable of seeing it even when they do it. So what I found in discussions is that even though now Trayvon's dead, the case is over, they've determined that he's done nothing wrong. He never was a suspicious person. He was just some kid walking home. They still see Trayvon as this sort of dark, shadowy figure kind of overseeing the proceedings. He's still a suspect. He's already dead. He's already a dead, innocent kid, but at the end of the day, they still see him as a suspect individual.
Well, Jeremy, up to now, I liked everything you said. I think you make a lot of sense. But there is an issue, which is that what do you convict him of? What do you convict Zimmerman of?
I think that the way the law was written, it was nearly impossible to convict him of anything.
Yeah. Hey, Jeremy.
That's what it comes down to. It's a very poorly written law.
Jeremy, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Let's go to Jeff in Holyoke. Jeff in Holyoke, go.
Hi. I agree with pretty much everything you're saying and certainly what the last caller said. However, my comment is on you asked several callers, what would you do about it? What would you change?
About racism, yeah.
I'm thinking our legal system, we should incorporate a different tier, perhaps, of consequences. Nothing that, you know, going to give you 20 or 30 years or life. But it seems like, yeah, I don't think you could convict George Zimmerman according to the evidence that I heard, but I still think he holds some accountability. Nothing that's maybe going to give him a permanent record, but maybe he needs to take a year of intensive, you know, sensitivity training. And I'm not just talking about this specific case, but in general, our legal system, I think, should add an additional tier, because there's a lot of crimes where, yeah, the person did something wrong, but maybe you can't convict them for a decades of, you know, incarceration. And I don't think they should be, but they should have some type of a rehabilitation.
Well, here's one. You could pass a law that says when the 911 operator tells you what to do, you have to do it. And if you don't do it, you've committed a misdemeanor.
Yep, that would solve this problem. Yeah, that would be
But of course, let's remember who's making the laws. In other words, well, no, you have a Florida legislature. It's reflective of a certain kind of bias, I'm assuming. The laws are what they are for a certain reason. We do know that that racism is alive and well in the United States, and
it is, and
that the people who elect state legislators are not electing them to make it easier to convict people on of a certain stripe. If you are following me.
Yeah, I do. And I think that many states are, you know, the tough on crime states, often the more conservative states, but not exclusively, that, you know, you really want to throw the book at folks. And, you know, it seems like a lot of our punishments kind of perpetuate hate or perpetuate an us-them dynamic, whereas opposed to, you know, we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of people do things that aren't right. Let's try to, you know, show them that it's not right. Give them some type of consequence, but you don't need to necessarily mark them for life.
Okay.
On the other.
Hey, Jeff, we're up against a hard break here.
Great.
We thank you for your call. It's very helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a few seconds off. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com. Glens Falls Hospital, serving 6 counties in the Southern Adirondacks and 28 locations. Big City Medicine, Hometown Care, Twitter, Facebook, and GlensFallsHospital.org. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley, 12 guest rooms with modern amenities located close to historic landmarks. The1850house.com. Mario's True Value Home Center, Volusia, New York. 2 locally owned locations, open 7 days a week for building supplies, equipment rentals, and hardware needs, featuring Benmore paint and stains. Mario'sTrueValue.com. And the Turning Stone Resort, offering accommodations, dining, and golf courses, located on the Thruway at exit 33. TurningStone.com for more information.
Well, folks, we're coming around the horn here. We have from now until I don't know. So let's go to Maeve in Saugerties, New York. Okay, Maeve, you're on the air.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. I was disappointed in this whole situation more than the verdict specifically, but just that the whole situation happened.
Right.
And I mean, I think that given that Florida does have a stand your ground law, I guess what I wish the attention was being focused on was the way that law was being applied unevenly. I know there's, you know, the story of a woman who fired warning shots at her abusive husband, and that, you know, that's racism. And I think that it's better to focus on the bigger picture than to rehash a case that is not going to be retried. And that doesn't mean that the verdict isn't important, or that, you know, it's not important to feel the anger that a lot of people feel about the death of this young man, but there are a lot of bigger issues of racism at hand.
What would you do about it?
Well, what I hope happens is that George Zimmerman's community and his neighborhood watch that he participates in let him know that in their eyes what he did was unacceptable, and that maybe he, you know, maybe he turns his life around into something positive. I hope that that will happen. And the community is the one that has the power to do that. The legal system has not.
Would you be disappointed if they made out as if he were a hero?
I would be very disappointed, and I would not move there.
Me neither. Hey, Maeve, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. Anne in the New Balls. Okay, Anne.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I just wanted to make a comment that if and the law needs to be, they need to get rid of it. And I don't understand why Trayvon Martin, him being allowed to stand his ground, was not talked about more or brought up in the trial more. Not that I watched the whole trial. Mm. And that also, if you've shot and killed anyone,
yep,
you should be tested for drugs and alcohol and even a mental evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no one to present Trayvon Martin's side of the case. And
well, that's allegedly why the prosecution was there. I mean, to present the fact that...
I mean,
they did
he's
choose,
dead.
They did choose to prosecute him. Yeah.
He couldn't say what happened. We
well,
only
I
got
couldn't
to
agree
hear
with
George
I
Zimmerman.
I couldn't agree more with you. That's right. And that's why those women voted on that jury to acquit him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm as disappointed as you are.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, that's the great shame of this. And thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
And thank you.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Judith in wherever. Judith, you're on.
Hi, Mr. Shartok. Yeah, I have several points to make. One, in following up on what the woman just said, the racism is evident in the fact that George Zimmerman was not tested for drugs or et cetera, but the corpse of Trayvon Martin was. And also, the prosecutor in the woman who received 20 years for firing into the mm-hmm. ceiling, that was Angela Comey, who also was responsible for this trial. And I think...
what do you mean she was responsible for this trial? I'm sorry.
Well, she was the one that decided that it wouldn't go to a grand jury and that it would go directly to trial. Do you remember a long time ago?
I don't. I'm so sorry.
Okay. All right. Anyway, I think, yeah, it's definitely racism. I think the... I don't know. I have no way of knowing if they planned it all, if it was all a setup and they were all in on it. But I think it seems to me that that it was directed like a current, like a river is directed if you take part of it and put it into a concrete channel. And I think the fact that they excluded all discussion of racism, the judge said that was irrelevant, and I disagree with the man who was the ex-policeman who said it wasn't, that it was irrelevant. And also they excluded the evidence of George Zimmerman's molesting his young cousin, a girl. And
okay, Judith, I'm going to cut you off only because I want to get everybody in on this, and they got a lot of people behind you.
Yeah, I'd like to say one more
thing.
Sure,
of course.
Yeah, you know, that telephone call that Rachel Jontel talked about, the NSA has that call recorded somewhere, and they could subpoena them to get the direct evidence if they think she was a poor witness.
You know, I haven't thought about that. Thank you, Judith. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yep. Bye.
All right. Let's go to Marty in Troy. Hey, Marty, how are you?
I'm good, Alan. Coming to this conversation a little late, so I hope I don't repeat.
Well, many of us are saying the same things, which is fine.
First of all, it's a tragedy. I definitely think he should have been convicted. But
you think he should have been convicted? Is that what you're saying?
Sure. And in a perfect world, he probably would have been. But I do think that unless there is new evidence brought, I think it's time to move past the case. And only because of this. I think that we should support our legal system because we created it. But having that said, we need to kind of look into it, into an almost almost activism point of view.
Well, there's been there have been a lot of treatises on racism in the criminal justice system, and there certainly, I think, it's been pretty certain that there is. So
yeah. What I'm saying is this: I'm saying that probably making my point not clear, but if he stood his ground and we disagree with that, then I think that then we need to have more of an activist stance and overtake that.
Yeah, we do. But of course, laws, as I said before earlier in the show, Marty, are almost inevitably reflections of what the voting, and I say that purposely, the voting population has to say, and the political population has to say.
No,
so,
I'm agreeing with you totally. Yeah. But I'm saying that if we, as in everybody in your talk show has been calling in and having a major problem with it or having conspiracy theories about it, then I definitely think that we largely need to kind of come at it and figure out a way to overtake that if we have such a big issue with it. And I understand that there's outside influences that happen. One larger one is the Koch brothers, who influenced AIPAC, who influenced a law that says if Trayvon's parents bring a civil suit against George Zimmerman and they lose, that means George Zimmerman's parents have to pay all of the court costs.
Interesting. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Right. So what I'm saying is that I think that we should support our legal system only to the extent that we did create it, that it was legislated, and that if...
But Marty, you've said that already, so I'm going to override and ask you this. But if that's the case, why don't we, then we would never make a change in the legal system, unfair it is.
No. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is that we should support democracy. And what I am saying is that... I'm not saying support it. Like, this is the law of the land, and we should just...
Well, Marty, there's democracy, and then there's democracy. In other words, gets passed by a state legislature composed of rotten boroughs in half the time. In other words, apportioned, in my mind, crazily. And then there's democracy, for demos from the people. Hey, Marty, I'm going to let you go because there are a lot of people behind you, and I thank you for all you've had to say today. Thanks again. Okay, let's go to Laura in Pittsfield. Laura, we're going to try to wrap it up, so be succinct. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll be as succinct as possible. Okay. I was a homicide detective in Florida, as a matter of fact.
Really?
I had several cases with Dr. Rao, who testified after she examined Zimmerman. She is brilliant. She is absolutely brilliant.
Well, remind me who she is again.
Dr. Valerie Rao was a medical examiner that was brought in to examine George Zimmerman. She did not do the autopsy on Trayvon Martin.
Oh, and I see. But there was an autopsy done on Trayvon Martin.
Yes, there was, by the local medical examiner. And my comment is I was absolutely appalled by the law enforcement testimony and the testimony by the local medical examiner who did the autopsy on Trayvon Martin. For a medical examiner to multiple times respond, I do not recall, I don't know, I don't remember, I have to consult my notes.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. And for him to bring his personal notes into the courtroom, also unheard of. That's courtroom testimony 101. You don't bring notes into the courtroom. They become evidence. When you listen to the testimony of Serrano, the detective who originally... not the female detective, the male detective who interviewed Trayvon Martin. Just listen on YouTube for the first 10 minutes when they play back his interview of Trayvon Martin. It's not an interview. It's an instructional tape on how to beat a homicide charge, a manslaughter charge. And when you hear the detective speaking more than you hear the man who's supposed to be in an interview, there's a problem.
Okay.
The only point I want to make is what wasn't delved into was the relationship that Zimmerman had with the Sanford Police Department before all this happened.
That's interesting.
Access to the police department. He had an intimate relationship with them. And when he came in under these circumstances, it's my personal opinion that he was coached through the whole process. So you're starting out with tainted testimony.
Well, Laura, thank you for that. I'd love to see you give a shout to my friend Kevin Moran at the Berkshire Eagle, because I don't know if he knows you exist in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and I think your story is fascinating. I can see it as a major article, you know, as a homicide detective from Florida. So I thank you so much for making the call. I'm fascinated by what you had to say. Thanks again, Laura.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay, moving right along. We only have a few minutes now to Jay in Albany. Jay, go.
Good afternoon, Professor.
Yeah.
I'd like to say I agree with the caller who said that Trayvon was standing his ground when he turned around
yep.
to confront Zimmerman.
Okay.
I'd like to pose this hypothetical. I think, first of all, the verdict was a travesty of justice. It's just horrific.
If you were on the...
And rife with racism.
Okay, maybe that's
and
all true.
Okay, now I want to go back to the point I wanted to make, okay. The hypothetical.
All right.
Now, Zimmerman's 27, and he was taking a pretty good beatdown from a 17-year-old kid.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Now, what if Trayvon was the same age as Zimmerman? Make him 27, worked in construction for the last 6 years, a big 6-foot-tall strapping guy, you know? When does Zimmerman fear for his life? When he, you know, after the 27-year-old pops him in the head, say, why are you following me? Bam, which is a natural response. Or as soon as the big
okay.
guy turns
okay.
around,
okay.
pull his gun and go, oh, I've got a gun,
okay.
better stop right
okay.
there.
Okay.
This guy's a coward.
Oh,
Zimmerman's an out-and-out coward.
Jay, finish up. Go ahead.
And an out, you know, your neighborhood busybody and an out-and-out coward. A
okay,
wannabe
okay, all right, you've been over that. Let me ask you this.
Okay,
Assuming you were on that jury and you say justice was not served and it was replete with racism, I just want to ask you a single question. You would have voted for convicting Zimmerman.
Absolutely.
Okay. Hey, Jay, thanks for the call.
Oh, by the way, another legal point. In New York State, and this, I learned this when I was training in karate.
Okay, Jay, you got to go fast because I'm
okay.
trying to get everybody.
We do not have a self-defense defense in New York State. The law is sufficient force to get away. If you're attacked, you're allowed to use sufficient force and run away.
Okay.
And it depends on what you are. If you're being attacked with a weapon, if you are being
No, that's a very interesting point, and we're going to leave it there.
And you can ask your legal counsel about this.
Okay,
and
thanks.
I'm sure it got me off of jury duty.
Okay, Jay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Let's go to Bob in Schenectady. Bob, as you can see, we're really up against the clock here. Go ahead.
Very quickly, why were there only 6 people on the jury? I thought there'd need to be 12.
Well, I think that, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a prosecutor. I just think that that's what the jury statute says in Florida.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll check that online.
That's what I think. One. Thanks again. Okay. Margaret in Albany. Okay, Margaret.
Hi. Yeah, that is the statute in Florida because
sure.
I heard that on TV. Everybody sure. was questioning that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just want to say a couple things. I remember early on when this was said, the father, the original judge, I think, had to recuse himself because he was really close friends with the father, George Zimmerman's father. I remember that from a long time ago.
Well, I don't know. I didn't see it, but if you say so, go ahead. What else
okay.
you got?
You know, why wasn't this a circumstantial case? I mean, black males go to jail all the
what's
time.
What is circumstantial here? Which part of that is circumstantial?
I mean, George was there. He had a gun. How
there were two there. Here's what
fight him off.
So circumstantial is you got a black man and a white man, a white kid, a black kid and a white man, and somebody ended up dead. Now, what's circumstantial?
Well, because if you're somebody's on top of you, how are you reaching for a gun in your back pocket when you're pressed down on the ground? I mean, how do you do that, really? I mean,
I don't know.
And how do you get, you know, a perfect shot through the heart? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And who was that woman that was just on Laura? She was a detective?
Yeah. Yes.
She's amazing. She needs to get on TV.
That's what
I
said.
She needs to get on national TV
Margaret,
and start talking about this stuff.
Margaret, we thank you. Okay,
thanks.
Now here's the bad news for Patrick and Ann and Patty, who have been patiently waiting to get onto the air. We can't do it. We're out of time. And I do apologize. I hate it when this happens. That's why I rush everybody, hoping to get everybody in, but we are out of time. Patrick and Ann and Patty, I do apologize to you. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Cafe Capriccio. Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the tradition of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York, cafecapriccio.com. And Curran Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. CurrentCompliance.com. And Field Goods, making weekly deliveries of local produce to customers at their workplace and community sites. Fresh foods from small farms. Field-Goods.com. And from the College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery services for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Hannah Hohenstein Flack. Our producer is Patrick Donjus. A word about him. He is leaving us. He's one of the best things that ever happened to WAMC, and he's on his way down to another career in Florida along with his loved one, and we wish him only well. He has been a big part of what we do here. I'm Alan Chartok. And now, stay tuned now for a news update.